This is my journey. Inspired one story at a time, a library of leaders was created. It began as a journey to learn. As time went on, it began to grow. All it needed was a platform, and this podcast was created. To listen, to inspire, to share. I am a storyteller, and this is my journey. Welcome to another episode of Profiles in Leadership. I'm your host, Steve Anderson, and I'm really excited about the guests we have today. Tyler Ott has been the long snapper for the Seattle Seahawks of the NFL for the last three seasons. He has signed a contract with the team through the 2022 season. He signed as a free agent in 2017 and has also spent time before then with the New England Patriots, the St. Louis Rams, the New York Giants, and the Cincinnati Bengals. He attended Harvard University, where he won two Ivy League championships and graduated with a degree in economics and a minor in environmental science and public policy. He also worked in finance as a client services associate at UBS Financial Services in Boston. His interests include presidential biographies, history, science fiction, and golf. He and his wife Ashley live in both Renton, Washington and Boston, Massachusetts. Welcome to the program, Tyler. I'm really excited to have you on today.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here.
So now, you grew up playing football in Oklahoma and then chose to attend Harvard instead of more of a football-focused university. So what kind of steered you to go with that decision?
Well, it pretty much comes down to how can you say no to Harvard?
Okay.
And that's actually what the Harvard head football coach, Tim Murphy, when he brings you in on your recruiting trip and he sits you down in his office and you're staring at all the championship rings that he's won in his time there. And he says, now, if you say no, you have to explain to me how you were able to say no to Harvard.
Okay.
And you pretty much get stumped right there. So, I mean, yeah. It's true. So,
well, it definitely seemed to work out for you. Not only did you have great success football there, you got into the NFL and you got an excellent education as well. So it seems like a good decision.
Yeah, looking back, I wouldn't change a thing.
Yeah. And were you specialized then as a long snapper, or did you play other positions on the Harvard team?
I was recruited as a tight end, actually. And there's a funny story about long snapping is I put it on my highlight film for recruiting out of high school, but when I got to Harvard, they were, saying, specialists go out, snappers, punters, kickers go out early. And no one had talked to me about snapping yet. And I just kind of raised my hand. I said, do you want me to try and snap? And they're like, you can snap? And then, I mean, who would have known that 4 years later I was coming out to go snap in the NFL? But yeah, it was funny that, I was a tight end first in their eyes. So,
wow, that's a great story. Now, playing Division I college football is impressive enough, but how do you put in all the time it takes to play at that level and still graduate with a degree from one of the most prestigious competitive universities in the nation?
I mean, really, the first skill you get at Harvard is figuring out how to manage your time, and that's really the first thing that the coaches and everyone preaches too. So, we had like an unbelievable support system at Harvard from the older players helping the freshmen coming in, and you learn how to stack your classes. You take your requirements of the harder classes in the spring in the off season, and you take your like gen ed, some of the classes that might be a little less time consuming in the fall when you're practicing and playing. So I mean, it's life skills that you have to learn quickly, I guess, and that's pretty much how it works. And you have study groups and I mean, Harvard is an academic school really first. You don't ever think of Harvard athletics. So the coaches are held to that standard too. So if you do have a class that you're going to be late to meetings before practice or something, like, they understand. Okay. And they have to accommodate for that. It's not, the school doesn't work their schedule around athletics. So it's really, you're there for the degree, and then your extracurriculars is, a bonus.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Now, getting into the NFL as a long snapper is usually not through the draft, correct? So Share with us your journey as a free agent and how you secured a position with a team eventually.
Well, I don't know how long this podcast is, but it was interesting at the start. So no, snappers rarely, well, say rarely, snappers get maybe one a year get drafted, late fifth, sixth, seventh round. Pretty much one a year gets invited to the combine, and you're basically a glorified jugs machine, just snapping for the punters and kickers that are being scouted at the combine. So, you know, a really good, or in a lot of cases, a really good and a really lucky snapper will get picked up straight out of college on a team that is looking for a new snapper or had a snapper retire. And that a lot of times is how a rookie snapper sticks on a team, is he walks into a truly open competition or an open spot. Whereas in my case, I went to somewhere that had an established snapper, and you fight kind of an uphill battle. So right out of college, New England was the first team that signed me, you know, going from being in Boston at Harvard to just down I-95 to Foxborough, 20 minutes. I was like, this is perfect. I'm going to go play for the Patriots, you know, win a bunch of Super Bowls, and it's going to be amazing. And like, I was dating my now wife at the time, and we were going to stay and live in Boston. So how much better could it get?
The stars seemed like they were aligning there, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, and then reality kicks in, and I get cut later on in training camp. So they kept their veteran snapper. And I'm on the street for that season. That's the 2014 season. And I probably have 6 or 7 workouts. And workouts is the NFL's term for an interview, basically. So I go in and to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in the middle of the season. They fly me in on a Monday night. Tuesday morning, we wake up, do physicals, and then you go out and I snap, usually to a punter and a kicker that they bring in for a workout, too. And it's basically them scouting, making an emergency list. So I go on 6 of these workouts. You know, you get a call Monday morning and they say, hey, we're putting you on a flight. Or maybe if you're lucky, Sunday night, they call you and say, hey, tomorrow we're flying you out. And you never really know what to pack. So you pack stuff for a week, and then you kind of have an idea of like if you need things to be shipped down, because you don't really know if they're making a change or just scouting. So that year goes by. You know, living on the couch, I'm working a little bit at UBS Private Wealth Management in Boston. Make all ends meet, pay for the bills. And after that 2014 season ends, the Patriots signed me right back again. They won the Super Bowl that year, so they signed me back, and they're going to move on from the old snapper that was there. And I'm thinking, okay, great. I just needed a year, continue improving, getting better as a snapper. And so they bring me in, I'm going through the offseason workouts, and then they draft a snapper out of Navy.
Oh, gee.
And before he gets in the building, they release me. So, which, you know, they say it was to help me so I could go find another team as early as possible in the offseason. They drafted a guy, he's going to get the reps, you know, so who knows? I mean, he's been playing there since, so he's in 1, 2, or 3 Super Bowls, whatever it is now. So, and he's been doing really well. So anyways, so from there and the Patriots, I go to St. Louis and I'm with them in training camp for 2015, get some game film and do a good job. But they had a snapper that was on a multi-year contract. He's been there and is still there since. And yeah, on the street doing the workouts. And I get a call at the end of that season, week 17, from the Giants, the New York Giants, and their snapper got hurt and they need a guy for the last game against the Eagles. So I actually drive down on a Wednesday from Boston, do my physical and work out for them Wednesday afternoon. And they say, you know, we're going to sign you. You're going to play in the last game. So that's on Wednesday after the team had already practiced. So Thursday is my first practice, and it's week 17, so it's just a walkthrough. Nobody's really fully practicing anymore. And Friday is another walkthrough, get a few more snaps with the team. Saturday is pretty much an off day. And Sunday I'm playing after two partial practices with the Giants.
Oh, wow.
So that was like the surreal experience, week 17, and playing against the Eagles, who are a really big rush team on punt. So that was, a little nerve wracking for the first game, but I got through it. It was like, once the first snap was out of the way, it was just like a deep breath, and it felt easy after that. And that's kind of the way, the snapper, how you want it to feel. Obviously you don't want to go out there under pressure every time. So that's how I got my first game, and that was great. They signed me to technically a 2-year deal to the Giants, and they bring me back for the next off season. Not knowing how their snapper is going to come back from injury. Turns out he comes back healthy. So I go with him. I go back on the street. So I'm doing the workout circuit again for 2016 year for a few weeks. And then the Bengals snapper gets hurt. And so the Bengals fly me in for the workout with a couple other snappers and decide to go with me. So I was with the Bengals for 4 weeks. I played in 3 games with them. Obviously got a lot of huge. That was a huge. The Giants game was huge, but the Bengals stretch of games was even bigger because it got 4 games of regular season game experience that teams saw, and it set me up for what eventually happened is after my 4 weeks in Cincinnati, the Seahawks snapper gets hurt in their last game of the year and they're going to the playoffs. So I had been to a workout earlier with the Seahawks. So they fly me in right away. I was actually at a bar. It was New Year's. It was New Year's Eve, and we were out celebrating a friend's engagement. And it was a Sunday night. I was watching the games at the bar, and I actually saw the Seahawks snapper had snapped a punt over the punter's head out the back of the end zone. So me being a snapper on the street, I'm like, first thing I do is go to Twitter and look up Seahawks snapper. And first thing that pops up is that the Seahawks snapper had rolled his ankle earlier in the game and actually came back in and played on it. And I'm sitting there and I tell my wife, I'm like, I have to stop drinking. I wasn't gone by this point, but I was like, I got to stop drinking. I think I'm going to get a call here pretty soon that I'm going out to Seattle tomorrow. And we get home later that night, like an hour later. It was probably 30 minutes after the Seahawks game was over. And I got a call from their front office saying, hey, we're flying you out on the 7 a.m. flight.
Wow.
So ended up, having my workout with them went really well. And my first game with them was the wild card weekend playoff game against the Detroit Lions. And then since then, I've been with Seattle. So,
yeah. I mean, it's a great story because you I think as you mentioned in your bio a little bit, you're like a journeyman. You're just, trying to find a spot, and it's not easy, and the odds are harsh, and it's not like the glorious draft and go and sign and you're in the paper and shaking hands with a coach. It's a different way.
It really is, and it's unique. The specialist world is unique because there's just no turnover in the job market. Guys play for 10 to 17 to 20 years, some of these kickers and snappers. And so you really do, you have to be really good, but you have to be lucky in a lot of times to fall into place like that, to find us an opening or a team that wants to go younger or a guy that retires. And a lot of times that makes or breaks it for a lot of guys, unless you stick it out for, for me, it took 2.5 years, 3 years until I stuck on a team. And some guys go 4 or 5 years until they finally make a team, possibly.
Yeah. And just a little personal note here. My nephew was a long snapper at Washington State for the Cougars. Oh, okay. And was actually rated number 2 in the nation his senior year and was real hopeful of getting a shot in the NFL. Unfortunately, it was the strike year. And it just never happened. And so he, he seemed like he had a real shot. But just as you described, the odds are just ridiculous. And he never got his shot. So it must feel good that you finally got your opportunity and you capitalized on it.
Yeah, it was amazing. And when I got to Seattle, and Seattle's a special place to play at, just with Coach Carroll and the organization. And once I walked in the building, I told my wife Ashley this. I was like, I'm not leaving. Like, I'm doing whatever I can do to stay here for a long time. And, you know, so far, it's been really good for me.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because, you know, you've seen five different NFL teams, and, you know, in your quest to find that starting position. So I would assume the team cultures are different. And so, when you look at the Seahawks, what do you think of their team culture, and how is it different?
Well, I always tell people is starting in New England was the worst and the best thing that could have happened to me. Is the expectations there are so high, and it's very, you know, with Coach Belichick, it's very regimented and very military-like. And you're expected to know all the fine details, the small things really matter. And you're quizzed on it constantly. So you're really studying, you're trying to stay on top of your game. Everything needs to be, you know, basically perfect in the eyes of the coaches there, because that's your job. And then the flip side of that is all the small things are really important in Seattle, and they preach it, very basic fundamental things. Every day you hear it, it's hammered home. But with Coach Carroll, the culture is, you know, a brotherhood, you're in this together, love your brother, but also to be yourself, be comfortable being yourself. He doesn't want to hold guys back because they feel like they need to fit a mold. And that's why guys, when they come from other teams to play here, they realize how different it is and how, you know, powerful that could be. And guys want to stay here, and guys love Seattle and fans, and, you know, and it feels like you're playing for your college team again, in a lot of ways, for me at least, that, you know, it's like you guys are there and you're playing for your team versus, you know, sometimes on a lot of teams, it feels like guys are just there to get their money because they don't buy in basically to the culture. And Coach Carroll has a way of making guys buy in, and, you know, he's been doing it for years.
That's great. So if you were to define Coach Carroll's leadership style, how would you define it?
Well, his thing is always compete. I mean, you're either competing or you're not, you're trying to get better. And that was one word to use, is always compete. And yeah, he preaches it, and we live by it every day. Even in our meetings, there's a basketball goal on there. And we'll start 90% of our meetings with a shootout between offense or defense, or, you know, a coach and a player, or two coaches, or, you know, whatever, just to start the day off with a competition. And so compete at being the best that you can be personally in your own skin, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. How important is player leadership on an NFL team?
Oh, it's huge. I mean, on and off the field, you have to have players that will lead offense, defense, special teams, because coaches aren't on the field. So there might be something that happens on the field that a coach might not see, or there's off the field issues that players don't want to talk to coaches about. And the better leadership you have, like in anything, you know, military, politics, business, the better leaders you have, the better your team's going to be. And the more you believe in, rely on, and can trust your teammates is huge. I mean, it's always been, teams that have great leaders are usually doing better playing in the postseason.
Yeah. And then how do you see your role in a leadership perspective on the Seattle Seahawks football team?
Well, I think it still has room to grow, but it's kind of like once you are somewhere long enough, you can start kind of establishing, or people start to see you being, you know, a rock in the room or on the field. And so going into my fourth year coming up here now in Seattle, I think, you know, I'm personally looking for it to grow and be a bigger contributor, like even in our union, to be a player rep possibly, or on the field being, you know, reminders and, you know, calming people down and making sure we're, you know, our minds are set on the right thing. And it's always, it's always fluid, because there's always, and you know, there's always guys coming and going. Some are more vocal leaders, some are quiet leaders. And I think I kind of fit in the middle there. I can speak up if I need to, but a lot of times I just kind of quietly go about doing my job, and guys hopefully can trust me that I'm going to be doing my job. Yeah. So it's, go ahead.
And I was just going to say, how do coaches and team leaders manage the big egos, the caliber of players that play in the NFL? I mean, you're dealing with people that used to get in their way and saying what they want to say, and huge egos. So I'm sure that's something that isn't easy to manage sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, you see it all the time with a lot of times you see the negative in the media of, you know, guys making too much noise or issues in the locker room. And honestly, I think the more leaders you have in your locker room, the more that it gets checked, you know, egos get checked in the locker room before something makes it out into the media or the public. And, you know, that's one thing with the Seahawks is there's definitely a lot of, you know, not, I don't want to say bad egos. You have to have an ego to be in the NFL and to compete and to do the job, but there's a balancing of, you know, there's a balancing of the leaders checking egos and keeping everyone on the same page. But there's also the leadership side of it from Coach Carroll down, where he wants all these guys to have their egos and be themselves. And if you want to be outspoken, you can be outspoken, but it's always in remembrance of that you play for the Seahawks, you represent the Seahawks and the NFL, and that, you know, if your teammate slips up and does something that's going to be a negative impact, then that's on him, but it's also on the players in that locker room. So it's always a struggle, and that's another thing that's fluid. There's guys coming and going in free agency and draft picks, and these college kids coming in as rookies are coming from being the big man on campus a lot of times. And sometimes they don't like coming into a locker room, and, you know, Bobby Wagner is there and he's one of the best, if not the best linebackers in the league. And he's checking a rookie at the door, you know, getting them right for, you're not the big man on campus yet. You got to prove yourself. And so it's a dynamic for sure that is always changing.
Yeah, I can imagine. What leadership lessons are you learning while on the team and that you feel will help you in your career after football?
I mean, I guess we've kind of talked about it. It's just a balancing act. It's knowing your teammates, how they respond, you know, how to calm guys down, how to, you know, make last minute adjustments or adjustments on the fly. It's about knowing when to speak up, or should I not speak up in front of everyone? Should we address something on the side? I mean, it's kind of life too. I mean, you figure out how to feel the room and feel the situation. And if you need to step in, and if not, you can let it ride and then sort it out on the side with whatever party needs to be sorted out with. And that sounds negative, but it's not always like a negative situation you're trying to diffuse. It's guys getting too excited or they're too positive, and, you know, we got to be real about this. Like, we had a really good week last week, but we got to get back to the basics of this is another really good team and moving forward and, you know, keeping everyone level. And that's always been something that for me personally, I've always been very level headed, even keeled. And that's great for my position because you can't get too excited or too down, and you can't, you know, mull on a bad snap or something. You have to move forward. And so that's how I've always kind of seen myself as a leader, just kind of calm the storm, even keeled, and keep moving forward. And so that's my personality. And that's just kind of, I think, how my leadership role has kind of morphed into, especially as a snapper on the special teams and everything. It's just, you know, I'm not going to be a big rah-rah leader getting everybody excited. It's going to be making sure we got everybody in the huddle and we know what we're doing.
Yeah. Well, there's some really great lessons in there. That was very well said, what you described there. Thanks for sharing that. You know, it must be a lot of pressure. It seems that fans only hear your name as a long snapper if you make a mistake. So how do you get the credit you deserve and not feel like you're just invisible out there?
Well, I don't know if I don't want to not be invisible. Does that make sense? That's too many double negatives.
No,
you know,
no.
It's a good, yeah. I think it's, you know, I think it's a good thing to be invisible to the fans. Like you said, you don't want to hear my name because that means something bad happened. And the flip side of that though is that you want to be valued by the team. And so the team sees it more than the fans do. I mean, even diehard football fans, when I run into them a lot of times, don't even know what a long snapper does or know that I'm only in on punts and field goals. They say, "Oh, you're the center. You snap it to Russell." I'm like, no. Completely different.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not a bad thing. I kind of enjoy it. I don't want to go to Target down the street and be recognized. I just don't want to deal with that. And that's, you know, as a snapper, that's kind of the world you're in. Is if you talk about it, if someone finds out, they're super excited to know, like, "Oh, you play for the Seahawks? What do you do?" I'm like, "I'm the long snapper." They're like, "What's a long snapper?" So it's like, yeah, for me, I don't mind it. And that's, you know, that's always been a part of the job, is the pressure is there. If you mess up, that's when you get noticed. And if not, then you're doing your job. And that's kind of the mantra that I think most, if not all, the snappers live by. And that's kind of how we've accepted it.
Yeah. Well, you seem to have the perfect personality for that. Someone that is comfortable in that role, because I think, as you say, a lot of these guys who had been big man on campus before and whatever, you know, they like to hear their name and they like to see their name in the papers and whatever. And if that doesn't happen, I can see how they would maybe struggle with that. But as you described it with your personality, it seems to be a perfect mix.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong. I miss playing tight end and scoring touchdowns and all that, because that's fun. It's fun to score and see your name in the paper for a touchdown, or if you go to Harvard, you see your name in the Harvard School paper, not the Boston Globe. But it's still it's still fun to go play, you know, and make big plays. And, you know, if I ever make a tackle, I'm excited, obviously. I still dream of somehow recovering a fumbled punt and running it in for a touchdown. But the reality I live in is that I want to be invisible, you know, to the public during the game, because otherwise something has gone wrong. So
yeah, exactly. Speaking of Russell, Russell Wilson just seems like a very effective leader, at least from the fans' perspective. And what is it about his approach that seems to resonate really well with other team members?
He's just so detail oriented. I mean, he's always taking notes. He loves the game. He loves to study. He's, you know, doing all the extra work, making sure he knows the ins and outs of every play, so that if, you know, from my perspective, I'm not in the offensive room, but if a guy doesn't know that play, they're going to ask Russ and he's going to know it in a split second. And so he just, you know, he puts in all the work, and he's a rock of the offense. You know, he's dependable, reliable, and he's really good. So, I mean, he does everything that you want in your franchise quarterback. And then he's like one of the best guys in the world, you know, the nicest. And if you have family walking through the building, he'll come over, he'll introduce himself, give your mom a hug, and, you know, make their day that they just met Russell Wilson. And it's just, you know, that's all I can say, is he kind of just checks all the boxes.
So when you have other players on the team, you know, that are great players in their own right and so on, is there jealousies when somebody like Russell gets, you know, so much of the press and so much of the money too sometimes? You know, is that something that the team has to struggle with?
No, I don't think there's really any jealousy. There might be some envy, you know, "I wish I was a quarterback" type of thing, or "I wish I got paid like Russ," but it's all, you know, when guys get new contracts, it's all congratulatory, like, you know, you got yours, like, you know, you balled out and you got your money, or it's not really any jealousy. And I think the same goes for the media. There's a level of media recognition that's really good and you can use to your advantage and, you know, market your own brand and everything. But I think there's a point you reach that there's too much media and it's overwhelming. So I don't know if, you know, Russ handles it really well, but he has his own company, the West to East, and he's got a staff, that PR staff and everything. And so, like, when you get to that level, you have to have help. And so you know, obviously you want to be famous and make as much money as you can and while you can play football, but I wouldn't say there's any jealousy in the media attention.
Well, we can all appreciate that. I'm sure that there are some positives of being a celebrity, and there are a lot of negatives too. You know, it's something that you probably have to manage, and some people do it well and some don't.
Yeah, exactly. There's always two sides to the story, you know, that you see the rich, famous guy getting, you know, the rich get richer. You go to a restaurant and they comp your meal as if you're super famous. But the flip side is that, you know, the paparazzi's following you or something. So there's always pros and cons, and that's just the way of life.
You know, speaking again about leadership, I recently read that when Marshawn Lynch joined the team late last year after the running back crew was decimated with injuries, mm-hmm. that he had a positive effect on the team and seemed to be a boost for morale of the players and so on. So how does someone that appears, again, to be very introverted and maybe leads in a very different way, you know, seem to connect with the players on the team and make a positive impact so quickly?
Yeah, well, I think with Marshawn's situation was, he is such a Seattle staple, like, you know, Beastquake and everything that he did for the team, and got a lot of guys grew up watching him. Young guys especially grew up, you know, Beast Mode was amazing, you know, was their favorite player. So him coming back, it had an air of like, this is meant to be, when he was coming back, when we were making our little playoff run. And, you know, you said he appears to be introverted, but in the locker room, he's anything but. He'll talk to anybody anytime about anything. And he really is a, you know, a great teammate. I always heard that in the NFL, is that the media always painted him a bad light because he didn't want to do interviews because he didn't want his words to be twisted in some way. And but in the locker room, he was a great teammate. He was looking out, you know, even when he came back to Seattle, you know, he was giving out advice to rookies. You know, I think his line at the end of the season press conference was like, take care of your chickens, you know, make sure your money's in a line. And I think he's always been that way, but, you know, again, it was twisted in a way, I guess, that he seems introverted because he doesn't talk to the media, but he really wasn't. That's not his personality.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I know that you probably can't reveal any secrets, or you may not know, but is Marshawn done? Is he going to be back next year to be part of the team, or,
you know,
that's the big question, huh?
I have no idea. That's above my pay grade. And I mean, I'll say that a lot of times I find out about people we sign or re-sign or cut through ESPN. So that I find out when everybody else finds out a lot of times.
Yeah. You know, and I know that you lean, as you said earlier in the interview here, a little more toward the introverted side. So how does one lead in a world that, you know, again, from the outside seems to be very loud and extroverted and very aggressive personalities? Which seems to be more the norm in professional football. Yet we all know that there's some very amazing leaders that do lead from a more introverted perspective. So how do you navigate that?
Well, you know, I think it's different for my position. Again, is being a snapper, is you're not expected to be, you know, a loud, aggressive personality leader. So, you know, I've always, my goal is to just be reliable and consistent and, you know, help, you know, my job is to snap the ball and snap it accurately. And then the second job is to help the guard on either side of me and help them get out and help them be better, because, you know, realistically, they're the better athletes on the field, not me. So I'm trying to get them in better positions to make tackles and make plays. And I'm more of like a last resort safety. So I think, you know, segueing that over into the leadership side of it is just how can I help my teammates be better? How can I be a better teammate? How can, you know, me and the other leaders on special teams, how can we help the other guys, you know, study a little bit better or point something out better on film or be in the right place, have the right reminder on the field and whatever it might be that game or that week of practice. And so I think being an introvert as a snapper is a good thing, because you're not, if you're the loudest person in the locker room as any specialist, a lot of times that doesn't go in your favor, because you're not in a position to talk a big game and back it up, because you're only playing maybe 10 snaps a game. And most of the time you're not, pretty much every time you're not the best athlete on the field.
Yeah. You know, so then you gotta spend a lot of time with those place kickers too. And from what I hear, they can be a little weird, a little into themselves sometimes. Well, right?
They would say that snappers are weird too. So it's all, it's, again, it's like anything. There's always going to be different personalities. So it's,
absolutely.
How can you just have a good time and have fun at work? A lot of times specialists get into a monotonous rhythm, and a lot of times you can get stuck or you can get bored, or it's how do you have fun for, you know, 25 weeks of training camp into the season, into the playoffs, when you're doing the same thing over and over again. So, you know, it's just, that's another aspect of, you know, coming up with new things to do and new drills or new, you know, whatever it might be. So it's always something. They're always trying to evolve, get better.
Do you just pinch yourself once in a while and think, geez, I'm one of the elites who gets to do what I love to do in front of 70,000 people every week? It's got to be a little surreal.
Yeah, you know, it happens a lot of times when monotonous rhythm is you forget about where you are and what you're doing. And then every once in a while you meet someone on the street and you're like, oh, no, I'm just a snapper. Like, it's not that big of a deal. And they're like, no, it is. Like, that's amazing. Like, how many people do this? And you're like, what? I mean, you're right. Yeah, it is. It's amazing that, you know, I'm blessed. I'm lucky. I've had a lot of help along the way from my mom, my dad, my parents, my wife. And, you know, sitting down and actually, you know, writing up a bio for doing this podcast, you know, I thought about, man, I've come a long way in 6 years now from where I was, or 5 years when I was on the couch waiting for hopefully a call to get up to another team. And so it's, you know, it's exciting, but you definitely have to look back and think about where you've come and then look forward to hopefully where you're going to be. So.
Yeah. Did you come from a real football family? Was your dad and other members of your family really into it? Or is that something you discovered on your own?
No, I definitely came from a football family. So my mom's dad, my grandfather, he played for Oklahoma and then went and played for in the NFL off and on for a couple years, drafted to the Lions back in the day. And so definitely came from a football family. And my dad played in Wisconsin, and then in just being in Oklahoma in the South or the Midwest, it's Friday Night Lights. Like, you grow up, that's the thing to do. And I went to a high school that was a huge football high school, Jinx Public Schools. And so it's always been there. We've always watched football. It just kind of, it wasn't really a question. You know, my mom told me a story that when I was younger, I started playing soccer and basketball. And my grandfather said, what are we going to do if he doesn't play football?
Yeah. So, oh no.
Man, that kind of says it all right there. So
yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So switching gears a little bit here, you know, I saw in the bio that you sent that you love presidential biographies, which I love them as well. So You probably read Team of Rivals, and that's one of my favorite books of all time. Why do you think Lincoln was considered such a great leader when you read about him?
Well, I haven't gotten to Lincoln yet, actually. So I'll say that my favorite was Teddy Roosevelt. I've read a few books on him, and I kind of stumbled upon that. His books were recommended by a friend of mine, and once I started reading some stuff on him, I just said, I'm going to start from George Washington and just start reading through him.
So, oh, wow. So you're really covering the whole gamut starting at the beginning.
Trying to. And some of these books are dense, so it takes a while.
Yes, yes.
But Teddy Roosevelt was, I think, definitely my favorite. And I just find that role so fascinating.
Well, I just finished a book, and it talked a lot about it. It was dealing with public lands versus private lands. And it talked a lot about how Teddy Roosevelt just saw the importance of not turning all the land over to private for private use, and he started the national parks and didn't start it, but was very instrumental in all that. Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting, people don't always think of him in that role, but he was a huge instigator to make sure that we could all enjoy the lands of this country and not just if you had the money to do it. So
yeah,
I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, he was a huge outdoorsman that wanted to see it preserved and not exploited, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, when you do get to Lincoln, put Team of Rivals on your list. That's one of my favorite books. It's a great leadership book. It was just an amazing, amazing story how, he basically surrounded himself with the people that were trying to take him down, and they asked him why, and he said, well, if they were good enough and smart enough to compete with me and try and get this position, then why wouldn't I want their advice and their opinions? So he asked, all the people that were running against him to serve in his cabinet, and it was really quite an amazing story. So it's fun to read.
Well, I'll add it to my list right now.
Awesome, awesome. You know, I've read that the average NFL player only plays in the league for 3 to 4 years, and you mentioned earlier that long snappers do have a record of being able to play in that position for a lot longer. Is it always on your mind that while you're playing, that this is a short time of your life, and is it kind of always there that, how long can this last, or do you just take it in stride?
Well, I think it's always there. They tell you when you walk in the building that the NFL really stands for not for long. And
yeah.
So, one of the things about my situation is coming through Harvard is I have the education and I have, job opportunities after set up from internships I had in college and just doors that Harvard opens and then now doors that the NFL opens. And it's just, I'm in a really good position moving forward, but it's always in the back of your mind, and you just have to be prepared for it. And it's always at the start of the year, it's always interesting when we get on our first road game on the plane and all the exit rows and all those seats are saved for vets. And then when you get on the plane, and then like this last year, I realized I'm one of the 12th oldest guys on the team, and I'm only 28 now. So I went from being one of the rookies just a few years ago to being one of the 12th out of 53 oldest guys on the team. So it really is a young man's game. And so every year I creep up the list on who's the oldest guy on the team. And it happens really quick. So,
yeah, that's crazy. And you mentioned earlier before we came on the air that you had an injury to deal with as well. So, from your position, you're vulnerable like everybody else. So you never know, how long that can last from the physical perspective as well.
Yeah. I mean, luckily as a snapper, I only get about 10 plays a game. And I mean, I'm not a running back, getting tackled every single rep or offensive line or D line that are, smashing heads together all the time. So, knock on wood, historically snappers have stayed pretty healthy through seasons, and hopefully I can do that. And I did have an injury that was more of a chronic kind of overuse thing that fairly simple to get cleaned up, and just so I'll feel better next season. So it's not hopefully just, yeah, hopefully you can stay healthy and you can play as long as you can and, you know, have fun doing it still.
Yeah. And, as a physical therapist, I know, you know, what can happen. And, I got to tell you that sometimes when you see how big and strong and fast those guys are with a full head of steam, like on a punt, man, that's, yeah, there's some collisions out there that are just unreal. So I'm sure it's, on your mind.
Yeah. When you stand on the sideline and you see it happen, you know, just a few yards away from you, it's real. Like the specialist and I joke about it. We're like, these guys take hits that would knock us out for like a week. You know, it's just like, but their bodies are just used to it and we just aren't exposed to it. But yeah, it takes its toll for sure.
And speaking of that, you know, just on a sidelight here, do you feel like the NFL and the Seahawks and specifically are, you know, paying attention to the concussion issue and some of the things that we know that are just the ugly part of the game? Do you think that they're putting in the time and effort they need to try and make that better?
Well, that's a hot topic issue. But, I mean, the Seahawks have always been really good at taking care of players as far as no contact, no full tackling, and a lot of practices, you know, taking care of muscle injuries as well as trying to eliminate any head injuries other than exposure in games. I think the NFL is trending towards the right direction. There's still progress to be made. They made huge improvements in helmets and, you know, all the new tackling rules to keep your head out of it. But I'll say it's part of the game. Like, you know, when you sign up that injuries happen and that includes head injury, and it's just, guys are moving fast, they're big, they're strong, and a lot, sometimes you can't help but hit someone in the head. Stuff happens too quick a lot of times. So it's definitely better than it used to be, but there's improvement, but I don't think it'll ever be out of the game. I just don't think that's possible with how physically and demanding and brutal that football can be.
And so you mentioned earlier that you do some work kind of within the union, and then you hope to be maybe a player rep someday for the union. What are the big issues that they're dealing with right now that is front and center with the union?
Well, right now we're waiting on the vote results for our new labor agreement for the next 11 years. And the biggest thing is kind of the owners want a 17th game. Right now we play 16. They want a 17th game. And then kind of the headline that gets thrown around on Twitter is the hypocrisy of promoting player health and safety and then asking for a 17th game just seems kind of backwards. And then it's all economics. I mean, it's how can players get a bigger share of the pie? You know, because we're the product on the field and we're sacrificing bodies and long-term health and everything else that goes into that. So it's going to be interesting. This weekend we head down to Miami for our player board meetings, and the vote is going to be after the last day of the meetings. Basically, all the 2,000 roughly players in the league get to vote, and we'll see what happens if we have a new deal or if we play out the remainder of this CBA contract and see what happens after next season, and who knows what it's going to look like. So it's going to be interesting, and we'll see what happens. I couldn't tell you what's going to happen at this
point. You know, and I hope I'm not putting you in a position where you know, asking you to stretch out there a little bit where you don't want to go, but it's interesting because I look at the NBA and the NBA, I mean, there's just way too many games. I don't see how anybody can physically play, you know, to their full potential or their full output every game during an NBA season. It's just ridiculous. Do you think that the NFL, the season's too long? Do you think it should be shorter and now they're trying to extend it? Or can you say what you think?
Well, and this has actually been my point of view. I've said this is that I guess I'm a little biased as a snapper. I just don't have the same snap count as everybody else. Do I want to play a 17th game? No, I don't want to play a 17th game. But as the deal stands, a 17th game is going to happen. So now it's about how do you maximize what we're getting in return. you know, we'll see. 16 games is a long time. And with the preseason, that was already 20 games. And I only played 10 games a season at Harvard. So I'm playing two college seasons in a single year. And I totally get it. If I was playing tight end, I don't know how my body would hold up to it after, you know, going into that 20th game at the end of the season. And so it's definitely a contentious point. And now that I'm a snapper, like I said, I'm a little biased. One less preseason game and one more regular season game isn't a big change for me, but I definitely see that how negative and potentially damaging for other guys and injury potential it is. And so it's all about how are you going to get compensated fairly for it now? So that's kind of my stance. And I've always been kind of in the middle ground here about weighing both sides. And that's how I guess that's how I approach life too, is I don't get too far to one side on either issue. So.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. I think it is a big issue, and it's something that definitely needs to be discussed and dealt with and hopefully decided on appropriately. Yeah. So how are the Seahawks looking for the 2020 season? We're pumped, man. Last year was a pretty good year, and what do you think?
Well, I mean, it's always so hard to predict, and you know, we don't have everybody in the locker room right now, and honestly, with the draft and free agency stuff that's going to pick up here next week, you really don't know. But I know we have a strong core. You know, we have Russ and Bobby, KJ. Running backs are going to hopefully be all back and healthy. And with our DBs, all our young guys on the defense are all making strides to get better and improving every year. And so a lot of people counted us out last year. They definitely counted us out the year before, and we won 10 games. And last year we went to the divisional game, second round of the playoffs. So I think we're always going to be in it. And again, we have Russ leading the offense, and a top quarterback in the NFL is going to win you games regardless. So it's a matter of how good can our young guys get from last year to improving into this coming year. And then, you know, how can it all get, all the pieces of the puzzle get put together in this off season, and, you know, finding guys on the street that are going to make impacts on the team. So I never like to predict anything, because you just don't want any bad juju out there in the air. But
exactly.
You know, it's, well, I think with Pete too, I think it's always, there's always a chance to be really good and make a run. So,
well, it's such a long shot too. I mean, I don't care how good you are, what your success is, to get to that Super Bowl game is a tough one. And I know as a player, that must be kind of the holy grail thing that you want to experience before you're done. And so it's the carrot's out there, I'm sure.
Oh yeah, yeah. Everybody, you're always, if you're a free agent, you're trying to find a team that's going to be best suited to win the Super Bowl and is going to pay you. And then if you're on a team for a long time, you just hope that that's the year. So, and you do everything in your power to do it.
So what do you like to do in the off season, and how much time do you really have? You know, again, from the fans' perspective, it seems like quite a few months, but I'm sure that you're doing stuff during that off season as well. So what do you like to do, and what's the off season look like for you?
Well, we get like 3 to 4 months off. So unfortunately, one of my hobbies is golf. And when we finish the season in January, we usually fly back to Boston where we live in the off season. And there's not a lot of golfing happening in January, February, and March out there. So, reading, checking the things off my honey-do list from my wife, it's just, you find things to stay busy. We have a house that, you know, I like to do my own handiwork if I can. So take care of that. And, we always love to travel. Our off season is really our only time to travel. So we try to plan a big trip every year. We went to South Africa last year. We've been to New Zealand and Iceland and Scotland. And so we love to travel.
Wow.
So that's kind of it. I mean, you, and it's our off season, but I'm still working out 4 to 5
times. Yeah, I was going to say, you got to stay in shape. You got to keep the body ready to go, I would assume.
Yeah. I mean, you, probably take 2 weeks off right after the season, and it's just completely unwind, and then you start getting back into working out. And so it's really, there's really no time that you have to be out of shape. I mean, it's, you're always getting ready for the next, you know, when we report in the spring for our off season program, and then we have 5 weeks off in the summer before training camp. And it's really not off, because if you come back out of shape to training camp, then you're going to lose your job most likely. So it's a full year thing for sure. We do have, obviously we have downtime and we have more flexibility, but you're always staying in shape.
Yeah. You know, Tyler, usually at this point in the interview, I ask all my guests for a pearl of wisdom. So in relation to leadership, I know we've talked a lot about that today, but what could you leave us with today as a pearl of wisdom in relation to leadership?
Just coming from my perspective, when we've kind of hit on it already, is I'd say just be consistent, be a consistent leader. Don't try to fit someone else's mold. If you're filling in a new leadership role, stepping in for someone else, don't try to be them, be yourself and be consistent. Cause that's what people want to see, I think, is you need to be yourself and you need to be your own person, and whatever that is, you have to own it and be it, and people will respect that versus you trying to be someone you're not.
Yeah. And I think, you know, being that authentic self, if you're not, people can see through it in a second. You know, they just have to, they have to know that what you're saying and what you're doing is your authentic self. And then they're willing to listen. If they think you're being a phony, you're dead before you even get started.
100%. I agree.
Yeah. Well, Tyler, this has just been a real fun interview. I didn't say it earlier, but you probably know I'm a huge Seahawk fan. I've watched, followed them forever my entire adult life, and it's just so great. It seems like the team is a fun team to not only watch, but just kind of be a part of. And it seems like the players get along, and it seems like the coach, you know, there's some good leadership going on. And from a fan's perspective, that feels good. And I think that's why the Seattle fans or the 12s are just into it, you know, because they can sense that. Again, it gets back to what you said. It's like an authentic feeling that that team has something that you can feel and you can notice, and it's fun to just to be a part of.
Yeah, it is a lot of fun. So it's the outside perspective is true that it's a lot of fun to play for this team, and you have fun winning, and you have fun every day when you go into work. So it makes it a better place to go work too.
Yeah. Well, we talked about it earlier, and my hope for you is that you're going to have that 15 to 17 year career as one of those long snappers that's there forever. So keep going strong, and we're rooting for you all the way.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah. Go Hawks too.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Tyler.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Profiles in Leadership. To listen to all my interviews, subscribe to Profiles in Leadership with Steve Anderson on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, and many other popular podcast platforms. Some of these interviews are on video, and you can search YouTube for Profiles in Leadership with Steve Anderson. You can also access the entire library of interviews on my website, orange.coaching.com, and that is orange.coaching.com, and go to the Media Center and click on Podcasts or Video Gallery. You can also enter the website from pilpodcast.com.